Welcome to Hello Universe, a podcast about spirituality in our everyday lives. We're your co-hosts, Kylie and Eva. Hello, beautiful weirdos. It's Eva here. Solo, actually. For now, anyway, until Kylie jumps on the recording for the interview with Leah. But I'm here by myself right now because it is Memorial Day weekend, and we recorded this podcast with Leah maybe like a month ago, and then we didn't meet on Monday like we normally do. So I thought I would just jump on, let Kylie do her mom thing and also her coaching thing and her business thing, because she's doing many, many things all at once, and just give you the updates on this amazing show that I am like so excited about. So I know this is like maybe bad podcast etiquette, but I really think that this may be my favorite podcast that we've recorded so far. And it's poor podcasting etiquette, because in reality, I love every single one of our guests, and I have learned so much from each conversation. And like my life has been illuminated by every person that we speak to. But I think there is just an interesting cross section of like the things that Leah is talking about that resonated with my personal life right now at this time, in this point, at this juncture. And so I think it just was personally resonant. On top of the fact that Leah is so wise, so warm, so funny, so honest, I think she's the perfect example of someone who walks the walk and is trying to do like such meaningful, impactful work in the world, but in a way that's not like, that's just loving. It's not through force. I really think it's through love. And it's just inspiring to see that exemplified in a human body. So anyway, I think you guys are really going to enjoy it. But before, a little bit of quick business, we're going to talk about some promotions. Okay, so I'm just going to be really honest with y'all. I am really confident about my ability as a coach. I love it. I'm really fucking good at it. And when it comes to being able to help other people feel more peaceful, like that's something I feel pretty assured about. I think just, you know, over time and having the practice and experience. What I am not good at is selling my program and talking about my program, talking about what I do, and knowing how to promote it. And I was talking to Kylie about this last week because she's really good at sales. And I was like, girl, I need you to help me figure out how to talk about what I do. And Kylie is the perfect person to ask, not just because she's like very skilled, but she has also been through my program. So she kind of just laid it out for me. She was like, Eva, you work with women who are ambitious and hardworking, but who also struggle with anxiety, self-doubt, and overwhelm, and you help them feel calm, confident, and clear. She's like, that's it. That's all you got to say. And I was like, that's it? She was really blowing my mind, because I think I had overcomplicated it. I was talking about how like, you're going to have all this spiritual awakening. There's going to be self-realization, liberation, blah, 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 all these things, which I do think is true. But like, that's too much information. People don't know what the hell I'm talking about half the time when I get like too into the weeds. So I'm taking Kylie's really solid advice and just saying that, yeah, I work with women who are hardworking and they do a lot, but as a result, sometimes they are just totally overwhelmed in their thinking mind way too much. And as a result, feel anxious and self-doubt. And what I want for everybody is just to live a more happy, joyful, peaceful life, because that is it. That is the whole shebang, everyone. That is what we are all looking for. So if you are interested, you can sign up for a free consultation with me at my website at evaleao.com, or find me on Instagram at badbitchliving. I respond to most of my messages when they don't get lost in the clusterfuck of Instagram that it is. And I'm happy to be able to answer any questions and support you in any way I can. All right. And then as for Kylie, when I asked her, I was like, so is there anything you want me to pass on to our lovely listeners? And she wrote, tell our listeners that I love them and they can book a reading at my website at akashicgrace.org. Super sweet and to the point. All right. So without further ado, I cannot wait for you guys to dive into this recording or this conversation with Leah. Her story is really interesting. And also check her out on Instagram and all of the things. Wait, hold on. I should properly introduce her. Give me 1 second. Let me find her bio. Okay, I'm just going to read her full bio because it's beautifully written. Leah Garza is committed to the full dismantling of society as we know it. That is the first sentence in her bio, which I think should probably give you a sense of why I love her so much. Okay. It is in that dark vision that she holds light for new and just ways of being to be born. As an Akashic Record practitioner, she works with people to find transformation and radical beauty in the midst of their trauma and limiting patterns. Leah is a veteran teacher and activist whose healing practice is centered at the intersection of decoloniality, I hope I said that right, justice and narrative rewrites in order to help clients and communities untangle trauma and integrate their innate and eternal power. She lives in LA with her boyfriend, her cat, and about 6,000 vinyl records. You can also find her on Instagram. She posts a lot of cool shit. I know she, you know, in addition to Akashic Record reading, she does she teaches courses and has like these workshops that she does. Not courses, but yeah, she runs workshops, she teaches, and she runs circles, I think is what I meant to say. All right. So without further ado, enjoy.
Awesome. All right. Well, thank you so much and welcome to the podcast, Leah.
Thank you for having me. This is a treat.
Yeah. We are psyched to have you here. Cool. I'll throw out, just get right into it. We jump right into the deep end here with our starting question. Leah, what does spirituality mean for you and how does it show up in your everyday life?
Yeah, I feel like I knew about that question when we first scheduled this. Interview, and that was pre-quarantine, at least for me. And I've really been like just kind of unraveling, not in a bad way, in like a very cool way, but I at this moment I would say spirituality doesn't really mean much to me. It's
yes.
It's I just feel like the idea of like how we would compartmentalize the idea of spirituality is really indicative of like our social programming to separate ourselves from spirit or from soul. And now I have to just, I can't help but see that everything is ensouled. Everything is like, we are much more spiritual than we are human. So spirituality is more the default state.
Oh my God. Wait, okay. I love this so much. Can you talk more about that? But also I guess in relation to your experience with COVID-19 and quarantine, like about quarantine has brought that out?
Yeah. So I do, I historically have like worked in a lot of organizing spaces and social justice academic spaces. And a lot of my own education, political education has come from like exploring social identities. Mm-hmm. So like race and gender and sexuality and socioeconomics and immigration status and language and all the things that project or diminish our power. I just have, that's been a part of my life for so long. And I've just really been thinking about like, since we've been in quarantine now almost for a full month in California, like what, who are we if we don't have a society to project, you know, those identities onto? Like I talk a lot now about like being a fat woman and like what that means in society and where liberation is. But like, it has like revealed itself to me that like those things only exist if you're in relationship with people. And it's not that I'm not in relationship. Like I'm talking to you all right now and I'm having connections and Instagram and phone calls and probably talking to people more on the phone than I ever have in like the last 10 years. But like, there's no gaze. There's no like gaze of the world to tell me or for me to like see in the mirror who I am in this world. And so all of those social identities and all the things that I perceived to have power, even though I know they're constructs, they really are like feeling so irrelevant right now. And I know, like I would know intellectually that, you know, race is a construct, gender is a construct, meaning that it's not a part of our natural birthright existence. It's not a part of our soul level existence. But now that, like, I don't, like, what's the fucking point of putting on lipstick? What's the point of getting dressed? What, like, what's the point of even, like, I love to online shop. What's the point of shopping if it's to wear to your living room? You know, like, it just, all the things are just melting away. And then I'm really sitting with, like, well, what's left? And I think that would be the thing that we would answer the question of what is spirituality? Like, what is, what's left over? I don't know the answer to that, but I know that it's something, I mean, I'm still here, even though I'm not in society, I'm still existing. So, like, what is that? That's the thing that I believe is tied to that question.
Oh my God. I'm like, I get a little fucking puffy up. I have like so much that I want to say because I literally wrote Zachy down on my notes here, what's left? Because I think that is like, that's the question. Like, that is also, I think, the journey. What is left over is, I think, actually, we'll find, what I have found in my experience is like more real than all that other shit because it's still here. And I feel like it's experiential. Like I have the problem of living so much in my brain and it's like thought. So it's all just thoughts and concepts, but those are like very limited. And so I have to like come back into my body and what I always forget this. I forget this 1,000 times a day, but then I'll like come back to it every once in a while and be like, no, no, no. I think spirituality is experiential. It's like something that's happening beyond my thought. And that's whatever this is right now. Just like us having a conversation.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
So. I love too this distinction that you make, like, we might intellectually know that gender is a construct or race is a construct or like all of these things we might intellectually know, but we're still out there putting on lipstick and shaving our legs and whatever, or we're not, but we're doing that as a not still in relationship to gender, right?
Yeah.
And, and so you can intellectually know that and wrestle with your relationship to gender as construct, whatever. But now we're actually experiencing a little bit more of what that means because, as you said, we're forced to just be in it. You know, like, I've always felt like, okay, I can identify that this is a performance, my gender, but I'm still performing it every single day, all day long. Mm-hmm. And I've never had an opportunity to kind of opt out of performing it. And you could say that I'm still performing it, but it is definitely like at a lesser extent. And that's really powerful.
I don't even know. So like, I definitely hear what you're saying, but I think also like the place where I've gone is maybe a little scarier existentially.
I'm here for it. Great.
Because I'm really like what even is my body? Like because when I think about like in quarantine, I've had more urges to like put on makeup and like get fancy meaning like put on an outfit, it's not pajamas, but like I've had more of an I always have like had a tendency for like fashion and like I've always enjoyed that, but like it feels totally like a function of my body just operating and not related to gender anymore. But the thing that feels more related to my idea of gender has been like this sobering look at how much I was like addicted to consuming and retail to like try to explain who I am. So like then gender itself started to kind of erupt into this intersection of like, okay, my gender is really not real. It's more related to like, what do I buy to make you think that I'm the person that I am? Like, especially like, I think being like a fat woman, like what clothes do I wear so that you think like, oh, she's stylish, so she must be normal or mentally healthy, or, you know, she makes a certain amount of income or she's educated in this way. And all of those like conflate into gender for me. And now that there's like nobody to like, it is a performance. There's no, but it's more than a performance. Like there's no like role for me to even fit into right now. It's like, it doesn't even exist.
It's like, yes.
It's really wild. And it's really wild to have no, like, I would not say that I'm like a shopaholic. Like I don't have like crazy credit card debt, none of that stuff, but I am feeling and realizing like how much just consuming, like how, like I love to go to Target, but like I can't. And like how much I don't even want to, since money is so slim right now. Money's so short. And like, there's no one to show that I live this socioeconomic like, I don't know. It's just, I can't even articulate it. It's just a wild thing that's happening.
Sorry, Evie, you took an in-breath, like you were going to say something.
Oh, no. Go ahead. I might just, like, if I'm afraid if I open my mouth, I'm just going to, like, not stop. So.
Well, that's okay. This is every reason why I wanted to have this podcast. Like, the part of me who went to grad school for gender studies and, like, has 4 Judith Butler books on her bookshelf. Yes. And then the part of me who reads the Akashic Records is, like, you know, I'm just having a moment. But, yeah. So the thing for me in relationship to the body that I've experienced is how much I am constantly trying to escape my own body. Mm. So for me, I am constantly trying to, like, I get a little antsy and I walk to the coffee shop. Mm-hmm, I get a little antsy and I walk around, I go places. And I'm constantly, like, as soon as I settle down enough to realize that my body is constantly freaking out, I go somewhere new.
Yeah.
So that being stripped away has just made me realize just this longing to escape that now I'm having a reckoning with.
Yes.
Yeah.
Totally. Yeah. Totally.
So can I think the word that you used that really caught my attention in the beginning is you said it's been an unraveling, and you said that wasn't good or bad, but I am curious. Yeah. I know that so much of your value system is about finding liberation. So do you find that it's been liberating, or has it been kind of a mind fuck where you're just like, well, what does this all mean? Right.
Definitely liberating and not a mind fuck. I think if this quarantine had happened even 7 years ago, 5 years ago, 5, 4, 6 years ago, I probably would not have the mental fortitude to not slip into massive depression. Mm. And I think my Akashic practice has just incredibly prepared me for this. So I don't, and I think I did for a long time, like, you know, I struggled with, like, depression and mental illness for a long time, and it runs my family. So I think, like, I would have probably not trusted that I could stay in touch with this reality if this were happening now. But now I'm like, I'm already I work from home many days a week already. I have instead of, like, being afraid of my inner world, I would now say that I have a very rich inner world where I enjoy living to begin with. So the unraveling, and I also, like, through meditation, I've become a really avid practitioner of, like, the observer perspective and being able to, like, observe myself rather than buy into every emotional, you know, roller coaster whim that I'm feeling and as the true reality. I think being able to observe has given me the space and the breathing room to, like, dig into, like, what's up actually happening here. You're still have some power here. Like, so yeah, not a mind fuck, but like my thoughts are unraveling, and I've been on this unraveling journey, I think, since I, like, took up the mantle of studying decoloniality, like, to really unravel that social programming. Mm-hmm.
Can you define that term for our audience who may or may not be familiar with decoloniality and all it encompasses, and then also I think specifically how it ties to a spiritual practice?
Sure, yeah. Yeah, so I guess, like, in order to understand decoloniality, you have to understand what colonialism and modernity is. So colonialism is, like, the belief or framework that allowed for, you know, Western European peoples to basically set out and take over the entire planet, foreign lands, indigenous people. This all happened through the belief systems brought about through the Age of Enlightenment, which we now call, like, the modern era or modernism. So modernism, you know, which is also, like, the time where we see, like, the creation of, like, Lutheranism and the separation from the Catholic Church and this idea that, like, man is more powerful than God. And, you know, we get the phrase, like, cogito ergo sum, like, I think, therefore I am, like, I don't need to know that I only exist in relationship to God. And so this, like, all of these things, it's also the development of science and then, like, the perspective of scientism, like, all these things coalesced in the period of enlightenment. And then enlightenment gave birth to the practice of colonialism and colonizing, which is the actual physical expansion that Western European people did to conquer foreign lands that did not belong to them. And like, you know, enact genocide and try to wipe out indigenous people. There's also, so, like, the framework for me, my entry point isn't really around there's so many ways to enter into the discussion of decoloniality. Some people are really invested in like decolonizing lands and repatriating lands, like physical lands. And that's not where I have been drawn in. I think where I've been drawn in is through the decoloniality of being. So there's a writer, Quijano, he wrote a paper in 2000, in the year 2000, on the coloniality of power. And he talks about how power, the use of power and the way that power is used by colonial people against indigenous people or their subjects is kind of like, it becomes an integrated part of our own ability to adapt in colonial situations. So it's not so much that we currently, I mean, there are current colonies all over the world. There are some, you know, the U.S. is constantly recolonizing its own treaty lands that it has provided to indigenous people. But beside all that, we grow up, we live, if we're in the Western world, we grow up in like a belief system that tells us, cogito ergo sum, you think, therefore you are. And if you are, then you're entitled to all of the exploits of capitalism. You're entitled to being number one. You're entitled to the idea of exploration. You're entitled, you know, like, and so then we think, okay, then I have to do this. And so colonialism ended up living in our bodies. And so to me, the practice of decoloniality, like my entry point is like, how do we find ourselves once we can, first, how do we identify where colonialism lives in us? And then how do we unravel that? So like the unraveling of gender, the unraveling of race or social identities is like an act of decoloniality, because I want to know who I am outside of this constructed persona that colonialism made. So yeah, decoloniality is like finding the places where colonialism has put down roots so that one, I believe in it, and two, I reify it with the choices I make in my life.
I'm just like... just like yes to all of that, and also I can't help but just turn inward and just that's I feel like that's a lot of the process I'm going through right now. It's just noticing all of my conditioning and all of my where so much of my suffering comes from also, and shame, just like a need to be productive, a need to be successful, like these stories of how we're supposed to be and how they're celebrated, and I am it's it is the unraveling and undoing of it, but it's fucking
it's deep.
Yeah.
It's like, it's like hundreds of years old. So why can we have to have like, and this is where like the spiritual practice comes in and where the Akashic Records come in. It's like, we have to have compassion for this process. We're not going to solve it in one podcast, in one graduate degree, in one lifetime, maybe even. It's, we have to have compassion for the undoing part of it. But it's interesting that you mentioned shame. Shame is identified even by academic people. Shame is identified as a tool of colonialism. There's a writer, Leanne Simpson, she's Canadian, she's Indigenous, and she wrote in I can't remember the name of the book, I See Your Light, oh man, no, I have to look it up, but that she just writes straight up that shame is a tool of settler colonialism to ensure that we become afraid of our bodies, afraid of our intuition, afraid of our ways, afraid, you know, like, and I'm not saying our ways as though I'm Indigenous, but just we become afraid of nature and then we yield it to the power structure of coloniality.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We externalize our authority.
Totally.
Here you go.
Absolutely.
Tell me which lipstick to buy.
Totally. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Oh, this is just so this happens all the time. Like, you and I are like, okay, we're just gonna soak up your wisdom. We'll be like back for, you know, we should have little intermission music when Kylie and Eva are just
I just feel like it's so rich. I just need time to process, especially because it's personal, but also so relevant to right now. And I think a lot of people are facing themselves right now and going inward and having to re-examine a lot of their things. And
I know, because they call me and DM me all the time.
What advice, maybe we'll save you some DMs, what advice are you giving people?
I don't have advice, and I don't ever give advice. I don't know anyone. I make a point of like, I don't know anyone better than they know themselves. And I think the only thing that has made sense for me is when you come up against discomfort is to like invite it in even more, like really, because I know one thing I know is true, and this is seems true for everyone, even though I don't like sweeping statements, the more you resist something, the more pain you're going to be in. Mm-hmm. And so if something is there to like work with you, even if it's painful, even if it's death itself, we can save ourselves some layers of pain by at least asking it, what do you want? Mm-hmm. So that's the thing I've been sitting with. I'm also, I practice some energy healing modalities too. I'm a metaphysical anatomy practitioner, and I'm also a theta healer. And some of the stuff we do in those two modalities is we're searching for core traumas. So we like, we'll dig in to see like, well, what's the worst thing that would happen if this thing were true? And we want to get to that core, and then we want to accept it. It doesn't mean like you approve of it, but you can first accept that it's there and then make your decision.
Well, awareness, I think, is a really, it's such an important step.
Yeah.
So that you can know what's driving you, what's the motivation or the behind the fear. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, and looking at like, you know, Eva, I feel like you walked me through this when I was having a moment, like breaking it down to the base, like the raw ultimate fear, and taking a moment to look at it and realize, okay, what if that did happen? Mm-hmm. Okay, here's what would come next. And like, like I remember once talking to a therapist about, so I've had postpartum, I've two small kids, I've had postpartum depression and anxiety with both of them. And I remember once telling a therapist that I was like, yeah, like my husband will take too long going to the grocery store. Oh, those days of the grocery store before COVID-19 when it was a simpler experience. And I remember, and like he'd be gone for like, you know, longer than I expected. And I would be like, oh, he's probably dead. Okay, well, my best friend and her dog will move in and she'll help me raise the kids and it'll be like that TV show and we'll be fine. And that's like how I would process. And a therapist, and I was like telling a therapist once to explain how crazy I am. And she was like, well, it's like actually a totally legitimate coping mechanism. Like if you dwelled on that, that's problematic. But to sort of be like, okay, worst case scenario, here's what would happen is a way of actually taking ownership of, you know, okay, worst fear, you actually don't own me.
Yeah. Yeah, most people that, and I think this is true for myself, most people I work with, when we like really dig in, we discover that actually their worst fears are happening like as we speak. Like, oh, so you're afraid that your partner will leave you and you'll lose your job and your mom will die? Well, guess what? All that just happened. You know, like, and look, you're still living. You're still like, you're here. So like the worst things that you're afraid of are just a story that can't actually defeat you.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. And then we could take this to like the Buddhist approach and, you know, Eckhart Tolle stuff, which is like in the present moment, like so much of that stuff, I think, is also a fear of what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. And also it's like visions that we have of the future and the past. But when we bring ourselves back to right now and like get really, what's the word for it? Tactile about it. It's just like, I can touch my body, like I'm here. I might, you know, plant my feet on the ground, like simple things like that. Just being like the present moment, actually things are okay. Yeah. Yes. And all we ever really have is the present moment. And I think that's a practice that we can cultivate. Like you can actually.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. The Akashic Records are always, whenever someone wants to ask about the future, they're always like, this isn't a question about your anxiety, actually. Like, let's not even look at the future. Who cares about the future? Mm-hmm. Like, but let's explore the feeling of powerless you have right now because of your, and the anxiety that's coming from that, that's making you want to know what's going to happen next.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah. 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 When you deal with what's happening right now, the future will kind of fall into place. Yeah.
Yeah. Or what's happened in the past that is still present right now because there's not any real time.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So this is, I kind of want to get a little metaphysical and bring it back to the beginning of the call, if that's okay. Cause I'm still, for some reason, the things that you said at the beginning are just still so interesting to me. This idea of unraveling and this idea of what's left. Mm. And I'm curious, I think you said like you didn't have any answers, but what have you discovered? Like what is left? Because I think I resonate so much with what you said about there's nothing to compare ourselves to in the outside world that then create the story of who we are. Like those are all just more structures, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, and I was actually having a conversation with a client. These are conversations I have with clients all the time. When I tell them that like, you're not your thoughts, you're the awareness beyond their thoughts. But then they're like, people get very attached to their thoughts. But like, no. If I'm not my thoughts, then what am I? And there's this big unknown. It's like this abyss of the unknown. I'm like, well,
yeah,
you gotta like there's a little bit of a leap of faith where you have to take a jump and be like, and it can be a little bit scary.
Yeah.
But I think it can be very vast.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, yeah. So I have been practicing the Akashic Records for 4 years now. And it always has been something that I've always done. And I didn't know it until I found it, but it allowed me to remember wisdom that I felt very resonant with me already. I just didn't have words for it or context for it. But the records are trying to show us a perspective of our soul, and that the soul is eternal. And so, and our teacher, and Kylie, I don't know if are you a Linda Howe student?
Mm-hmm. Okay. I read her book.
Okay.
Yeah.
I hope you get to take a class with her, because she's amazing. Our teacher will say, like, nothing can put your light out. You can't even put your light out. Like, nothing can diminish your light. You can be killed or you could kill yourself, and still you cannot diminish your light. And that seems so, like, far away from the human experience. But the more that I work in the records, the more that I understand that that's the immediate truth right now. And so what's left is the eternal parts of us. Mm. The human parts of us are so temporary, and you know, I hear all these metaphors for it, like it's the coat that you wear in this lifetime. It's the play that the records have been showing me this play thing a lot lately, that you're putting on a play, and you stage a play, and you bring in the actors who are the people in your soul circle to help you perform the soul level lessons that you've set out for the blueprint of this lifetime. And so, like, in order to like understand self-love, you might project yourself you might cast yourself in a play in a family that is really hard to access love from. They don't love you. And so that's the life you chose to set up, you know, to the context to hopefully get to the lessons that you're seeking to understand. So I just feel like actually lucky. The unraveling is like a real gift, because I think there's a lot of like pain or potential conflict that some of us are shielded from in our homes. I mean, there are many others of us whose homes are the most dangerous place right now. But that's not my situation right now, which I'm very lucky for. And it's given me that time to like explore things that I maybe didn't have the guts to say before or confront when I had to be in public all the time.
Yeah. So Kylie and I have this saying about what's been happening with the pandemic, and this idea of like, well, everything's kind of falling apart, and let's not put things back together the same way. Mm-hmm. And my hope is that like we can walk out into the world taking lessons from this and like, but okay. So this is a question that I struggle with a lot. What do you think the light thinks about gender and race?
The light, the eternal part of
the eternal. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What do you mean? What does it think? What are you saying?
Because I feel like I feel like the light is this limitless. I mean, this is just, I'm limited by language, but whatever we want to call it, consciousness, light, love, mm-hmm. it's this like limitless thing that cannot be, like you said, can't ever really be diminished. And I feel like all of these different things, whether it's race, gender, or bodies, or thoughts, they're all just constructs.
Yeah.
And I feel like these are opposing forces, right? Because like a body is just, it's a limited thing. And then the light is limitless. And sometimes I'm just like, the light's probably just like, don't you see that you're more than any of these mm-hmm. constructs could ever be, even mm-hmm. though things like gender and race are also really important to me. So
mm-hmm. Do you ever listen to Bashar? Are you guys familiar with Bashar? Mm-mm. Bashar is a channel, kind of like Abraham Hicks. Do you know Abraham Hicks? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Bashar is a channel like Abraham Hicks. And Bashar always says that Earth is the master class, and only very elevated beings could live here and participate in this. And that really flipped. That was like before I was that was very early on. I heard that in this awakening of whatever I am doing right now. But that really flipped the script for me, and it made me start to value and
or see the value and see the preciousness in the things that we humans do that actually are stupid and painful and cause a lot of like hardship. There's a lot of wisdom there, and only someone who could handle and have the resilience of this kind of living would choose to come here. So I think
that's a really beautiful perspective.
It's so empowering. Yeah.
So rad.
Because normally I'm like, oh my God, people are stupid. Like yeah. I have some like angry thought about like, you know,
but it's usually me that I'm the stupid one. So like,
that too.
Yeah. We projected it ourselves too. And so I come back to that often because I am like observing. I hate Donald Trump, and I apologize if this is going to bring you some hate mail.
I don't think so.
Please, that is welcome hate mail. We are very comfortable with that political stance.
but let me just also say that I love Donald Trump because he's a gift for this world. Like I live in LA, and I went to the first Women's March in 2017, and there were over 1 million people in the street. And the records talk to me a lot about the political activity on this planet, and they always direct me back to the Women's March to remind me of like, look at how activated people are in the name of liberation. And this would not have happened without him. And so like, I cannot listen to him talk. I cannot watch a press conference. I cannot look at his face. I hate the human being of Donald Trump. It's like a conflation of like, I want to throw up plus like memories of fighting my dad. It's like all these things together. Like it really is visceral. But like when I like observe from the Akashic perspective, what's happening, he's the worst of all of those social identities. He's the colonizer. He is the power structure. He is the worst. And yet he is like no less a being of light than us. So I don't know what the answer is to what you're asking, but I definitely trust the soul. I trust there's wisdom there. And if we can see that, even if we could just see that the light is in us, even when we are experiencing like massive oppression or hardship due to the structures of that human beings have made, then I think that we're going in the right direction, finding our power and like in these situations. And then that's where we can like shift those things.
Mm. Yeah.
I don't talk about politics when I'm in the records a lot, although I did recently was like, what the hell? Like how is like, that was basically my question was like, what the hell about Donald Trump? That's basically the question.
Yeah.
And so in a sort of similarly flip response, the answer I got was somebody had to let it fall apart.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then in a way, like his horribleness is like, I don't know how to describe it because it came like bundled in this like energy of like love and grace that I now can't channel because I'm just being me. But there was something really peaceful and beautiful.
Yeah.
At the same time, and acknowledging like, yeah, this is a shitstorm.
Yeah. He's a catalyst. He's a true catalyst. It's funny. The records have told me from the beginning that my job in the records is political. It's like to bring the Akashic perspective into politics. And in fact, I did my first practitioner certification course in January of 2016. And we had the homework that we had on the first night of the class was to go home, just open your records and see what you get. And I went home, opened my records. I came back the next day and all the women in my class were like these just, you know, very precious, like white yoga ladies, like, you know, oh, they told me I need to love myself more. I need to be more gentle with my, you know, family and, you know, whatever. And it got to me and there, I was like, the record said that Donald Trump's going to be elected. And they're like, why would you bring that in here? Like, why would you do that? And I had never had a reading before. I had heard the term Akashic Records, but I had no idea what it was. A friend of mine had a reading with our teacher now, Helen von der Heide. And after just one reading was like, you have to take this class. I don't know why. I'm going to send you, I'll pay for it even, but you have to do it. And as soon as I did it, it was like, oh, this is clearly, I was supposed to be here. But yeah, they've been talking to me ever since about the politics unfolding and they have been accurate every time.
That is Fascinating.
Yeah, that's really cool.
There's a question I wanted to ask you, and I'm just going to say an anecdote first. So you said something about how when you opened the records and started channeling, it was like something that you actually felt you'd always been doing and you kind of had like language and tools for. And that actually just like my whole body kind of was like, said yes in response to that. So thank you for that explanation. Mm-hmm. But I had a moment just before my son was born. So my son's due date was Trump's inauguration. And so I had a moment where a beautiful, beautiful friend got me a prenatal massage just before the election. And I remember getting the massage and I was like going into it kind of with the anxiety of like, I'm going to have this baby. Will it be okay? Also, oh my God, Donald Trump. And I really had this, like got into this very, very peaceful place. And I wasn't open and spiritual the way that I am now. Mm-hmm. And I got this really like kind of transcendent space and I heard and felt everything is going to be okay. And so I came out of the massage and my friend was like reading her book and she was like, how was it? And I was like, great. Everything's going to be okay. The baby's going to be born and Donald Trump is not going to be president. And so I had this huge crisis of faith after that did not happen because I felt like I've always trusted that. When that inner wisdom rises up, I always trust it. Mm-hmm. And so I thought, oh my God, I can't trust it anymore. Mm-hmm. Until I realized, no, you just added, you interpreted the message that you got that you wanted to get. Like the answer that everything's going to be okay. Yeah. It is not going to be okay in the very specific way that you were holding in your mind.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
My anecdote aside, I'm curious if you could speak more to, I guess, actually just what your spiritual journey is that brought you to the point of reading the records and doing activism. It also occurs to me that academia is a very cerebral place, which is in some ways very separate from the heart-centeredness of like the records and whatnot. And so I'm curious how those two, like you hold them side by side. So I guess I'm asking four questions at once. So it's a platter.
That's okay. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I am a lifelong skeptic, third dimensional critical thinker. And so to be now essentially like a psychic that works in the crystal shop is a really weird thing for me. I mean, we're closed right now, it's weird. So I would say, I was a teacher. I taught high school in Watts. I taught English for 18 to 24 year olds who were coming back from whatever absences from public education to get their diplomas. And I was pretty radical social justice education advocate. And our school closed. Our school closed. And then I was rehired by the same charter to start a new school at Men's Central Jail in LA. And I was really excited because I've wanted to do education in jail for quite some time. And right before school started, the week before school started, my security clearance was revoked. And they wouldn't tell me why. But I had begun setting up my classroom. I had already started meeting students. And then out of nowhere, I was laid off. And so that was a real shock to my system, especially because I have no record, no priors, no never been evicted or fired from a job, nothing. Mm-hmm. Never even had a speeding ticket. Didn't make sense. But of course the records are sealed so you can't find out why. But so in that time, this was in the fall of 2015, I just was like, I'm unemployed. I'm going to look for jobs. But in the meantime, I'm going to take fun classes and do cute, fun me things. And so I started taking like just dabbling in spirituality just because it seemed like that's what people are doing. LA is just thick with, you cannot swing a dead cat without hitting like a sound bath meditation.
Yeah, for real.
So I just thought I would dabble. And I found my theta healing teacher. And she really kind of made it safe for me to explore that world more. And a friend of mine that around the same time found the Akashic Records and introduced me to my friend and teacher, Helen von der Heide. And I think it was when I took the Akashic class that it just felt, it was just such a feeling of resonance that I was compelled to go forward, even though I was unemployed and probably, you know, at the time couldn't logically make sense of spending hundreds of dollars on certification classes. I was compelled to do so. And that brought me to having to really, really let go of my identity as a teacher. I would apply for jobs, and I've never not worked from the time I was like 17. I've always worked. So to not be getting interviews even for years, like 2 years, I had 3 interviews. I was very stuck trying to hold on to who I thought I was. And then I, in the world of social justice, which I don't really believe in social justice anymore. And I don't, it's one of the things that I really hate is the toxicity of, if you're basically not bleeding yourself to death, then you are not down for the cause, you know, like, mm-hmm. And so there is a real crisis that I went through in my mind of like, I'm worthless if I'm not teaching, because I'm not helping anyone. Like, mm-hmm. And then I had to remind myself, like, bitch, your school laid you off. Like I would have to, like, you didn't quit anything. Like, you know, like, but I couldn't let, I just couldn't let go. And I ended up doing a series of breathwork sessions with a person that was referred to me. And I probably would have balked a lot at breathwork, just like, that's like some West Side LA kind of thing. I don't want to do that. But I was desperate for something to just give way. Like, I kept getting, you know, people telling me to surrender. And I'm like, how do I surrender? I don't know how to do it. But at the same time, I was broke. I was totally broke financially, but still finding ways to stay afloat that were miraculous. Like, I used up all my unemployment, and then out of nowhere, unemployment called me and was like, oh, you qualify for another 6 months. Like, just mm-hmm. things like that. I had like a random $500 appear in my Venmo one day. Like, just really like cosmic support, divine support coming through to push me forward. And I did this 3 breathwork sessions. After the second breathwork session, I went to San Diego to visit my sister, my mom and sister. I'm from there. And we went to the beach, my sister and I. We usually go to the beach like once a year together. And I grew up a really strong ocean swimmer. My dad like taught us how to swim in the ocean from the time we were very little. Around the time I was like 20 years old, I almost drowned in the ocean with some friends, and I had to be pulled out. It was really scary. And from that moment on, I was just like, oh, I'll go waist deep, no more. I'm, you know, kind of terrified. And on this one day in July, my sister was like, let's just swim out. And it was so crowded. It was like one of those days where like you walk out and you're bumping into people in the water. So I felt like, okay, well, if I'm going to drown, someone is going to be with arm's reach. So let's just try it. And we like swam and we swam and we swam, and we were basically away from people, and the water was very calm. And there was just this moment that I recall of just completely like all the muscles in my body just like kind of letting go. And in that moment, I feel like that moment must have been a portal, because it was this moment of like, I'm okay if I die right now. And then simultaneously, the ocean would never kill me. Like, it's holding me. It's not mm-hmm. going to kill me. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what actually happened in that moment, but I came out of the ocean different and
reborn.
Something. I think I went through like the, you know, that very long death hallway of just letting go of stuff. And I mean, when I came back, and I wasn't consciously aware of what's happening, but I came back and like money just started flowing into my life. And actually my need to hold on to who I thought I was just kind of faded away. Like, I just, things, I guess, like, what I thought surrendering was going to be a conscious process, and it wasn't. It was like a full body, emotional, energetic, soul level process. Like, it was, it happened to me. Like, it surrendered me rather than me surrendering it. And
you can't white knuckle surrender.
No, it's, which is like why colonialism is infused in everything. Cause I thought I had to work harder to surrender, and you can't, you can't work harder. There's effort. There's like going with the waves. There's, which is like crazy metaphor, but like, cause I was literally in the waves, but like, there's like, you can align with these things, but, and you can be conscious of it, and you can make choices to align. So there's something of an effort there, but it's not related to productivity or work. And I couldn't understand that, a whole body understand it before that moment.
Wow.
Yeah.
Again,
for I am having a moment, guys. Yeah. I am having a moment.
Yeah. Like, you people, the listeners, you can't see our faces, but me and Kylie are just like, our jaws are just like on the table, because it's such a beautiful story.
And in the way that like, in the way that wisdom that is like the wisdom you need to hear is the wisdom you already knew, right? Like you're saying this, and I'm, and there's a part of me that's like, there's a part of me that knows that and knew that, and yet
it's like we intuitively know it already, but
get
in the way.
Yeah,
I really need to think about this though. It's surrendered you. I think that's so such a crucial point because you can't can't white knuckle surrender. It's funny. I keep trying though.
I didn't know another way. And so like going back to the Akashic Records, I'm always confronted with like almost the feeling of shame that I couldn't get it right sooner. And it's like, but the records are all, like Linda Howe has this phrase that she always teaches us, which is like, of course, it's no wonder you did X, Y, or Z thing. You wouldn't have done it if it wasn't the best idea you could come up with at the time. So like until that moment, the best I could do was hold on to like an identity that I thought was going to come through for me. You know, I invested, I have a graduate degree in education. I have a teaching credential. I spent 20 years of my life working in education in different ways. Like, how can this not come through for me? I've invested. So like, of course it makes sense. I was holding on. It was the best thing that I knew how to do. I wasn't ready to surrender. So like it, that surrender has to, everything has to become hand in hand with compassion or else it's not going to work.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm thinking a lot too about like the trauma that we hold on to, right? And the way that like the reason that your body is holding on to trauma is because that's the best way it knows how to keep you safe.
Totally.
Right?
Totally.
So you can't then like beat yourself up for like, you know,
surviving.
Surviving.
Yeah.
Like that just makes it worse.
Yeah. Have you read the book Healing Through the Akashic Records?
No, that's the second time this week that book has been recommended.
Okay.
That message book, received.
That book and that
I
class.
I'm a 10 fast enough.
That book and that class were like so transformational for me. I mean, like she just straight up says trauma is a gift, which is more than, it, that's more than compassion. That's like, oh my God, that's like finding an Easter egg in your life. Like that's like when you understand that your locus of power is not in the place that you're trying to rid yourself of and release and heal, but it's like, it's right there. It's not in the releasing. It's right in the pain. It's right in the experience. It just, you do start to understand that this is a masterclass. You came here because you are so elevated. Like you, your magic and your transformational capacity is right in the same place that you are like dying to, you know, release in this magical sound bath. Healing the hearing. Like, no, you're trying to smudge it away. You're trying to cut the, doing a cord cutting ceremony for a thing that is like actually your power and your magic. Like, it's right there.
This literally came through for a message I was giving. I was reading for a client last week, and that was exactly it. It was like, what is my soul purpose? Kind of was the question, which we all always ask a thousand times. And the answer was, where does it hurt the most? I mean, I'm paraphrasing, but it was like, where does it hurt the most? That is your gift.
Absolutely.
Oh my God. I'm making a mental note to re-listen to my own podcast because I'm like, this is so good. I'm truly
It happens all the time that when we're editing or I'm writing the show notes, I'll message you and be like, I forgot to write show notes because I just re-listened to it for half an hour.
But seriously, Leah, I'm just, you are just dropping such beautiful gems of wisdom and love.
Thank
you. I feel so, it feels so nourishing.
Thank you so much.
So then what happened afterwards then? So you, in terms of your path, I'm curious, what was next?
This is where I did make a conscious and in like decision to stop pushing against a brick wall. It took a little bit of doing, but by the end of 2017, I made a conscious decision that I would stop looking for jobs, like straight jobs, like 9-to-5 jobs. I would stop looking for teaching jobs because they weren't coming. Mm-hmm. And so I kind of was like, I don't think we should ever say, I'll never do this again, or this is how it is for, I don't think we should make hard and fast rules about ourselves, but we should listen to what is resonant. And so this is something that the records speak a lot to me about, and it's emotional resonance. And so the law of attraction has become like really misinterpreted and really like demonized, I think, through race and privilege lens. And it's become like a, you know, if you're a wealthy person, namely a wealthy white person, maybe even a wealthy white lady, you might have time and money to get like a manifestation coach or someone to help you work with this. And the truth is that the law of attraction is a default state of the universe. It's a default state. It's happening no matter what. So if it's happening no matter what, then everything you're doing is manifestation all the time. And so what the records teach me and want me to like be sharing with like the public and with clients, and I haven't like figured out how to do this yet, is like, instead of looking at like follow your joy or follow your bliss or follow your excitement, instead follow your emotional resonance. So follow the thing that is the most resonant for you. And that thing might be like breaking up with a toxic relationship. That's not going to be joyful or fun, but it is resonant. If it's resonant, then that is the thing that's pushing you in the direction of your soul purpose. It's pushing you in the direction of where you're supposed to be going in this lifetime. So you don't need to see the road ahead of you. You just have to be going in the emotionally resonant direction. And it can be scary though, because colonialism tells us to like fit in a box. Capitalism wants us to be productive for the greater society, for the wealthy classes. And if we're not doing that, there are so many booby traps in our society that are designed to like get us and push us back into our roles. So for example, deciding to not apply for jobs means I'm also deciding to not have healthcare that's secure, income that's secure, you know, a retirement plan that's secure. So those are like physical things that are so hard to work against that like it feels like sometimes you just want to give up and go back to trying to find a job. But that's not what is for me anymore. And so I had to like listen to myself above the entire planet. Like I had to put myself first, but in doing that, it makes me available to do the work that I'm meant to do, which I believe has to do with being in relationship with others. So it's the putting the oxygen mask on yourself first before putting it on the person next to you on the airplane. It's like my dad would always say, like, give of your surplus, not of yourself. Like making that decision was to fill up my surplus. Yeah. And so to mess with me, I think I was still slightly holding on to like what I thought, okay, if I'll go back to teaching, if I can have a part-time job that pays me as much as a full-time job, if I can work 3 days a week, if I can teach whatever I want, if I don't have to hide my spiritual side or my Instagram presence from the school, then maybe I'll consider it. And then lo and behold, I was offered a job with all those things. And it made me want to throw up. And I at that point I was like, I can't say yes. So I actually turned down a teaching job by the end of 2017. And
can you say why it made you want to throw up? Like why you had that?
Because I knew that it wasn't resonant for me and that I would be limiting myself by going back into a box that I've broken out of. So my body was trying to communicate with me by giving me nausea to point me in the direction of no, don't do this. And a lot of the stuff that I teach is like, how can we practically listen to our bodies? And nausea is one of the things that like, I always am talking to people about, like, does it feel good or does it feel bad to want to throw up? And people are usually like, it feels bad. And so it's like, okay, then what are you going to do about that? And generally in the work, you know, in the working world, we ignore nausea every Sunday night when we have dread about going to work on Monday morning. And we're programmed into that. We like, this is intergenerational. Our parents teach us this from the early age, kindergarten, right off the bat is like, ignore the way you feel about this. You're going, you're going to go until you're 65 or 70 years old.
I'm just going to acknowledge that I'm using my work laptop and a Slack message just went off as you were saying that. So, you know.
And how did you feel about it? Did it give you a little moment? Or like just a little flitter in the heart of like, all those things are, our bodies are talking to us all the time.
Yeah, they really are. They really are. Yeah. So, okay. I relate to this so strongly. I mean, I think for me, the way I often describe it is like, I can just feel the yes or the no in my body. But for a lot of people, leaving what feels like a no doesn't always feel like an option, right? So how do you navigate that, honoring your emotional resonance while feeling perhaps powerless or stuck or, you know, or even if it feels like a temporary stuck, right? Yeah, how do you navigate that?
Yeah. So like, I'm always like mediating with the records, like, okay, y'all are not embodied in human lives, so you, it's very easy. It's very easy for you to be like, just quit your job. But we have to navigate that reality. I did not have an easy time. I mean, I definitely had several months, if not a couple years, where it was like choosing between eating or keeping my phone on. Yeah. You know, like, so it wasn't easy. But so going back to what we were talking about earlier about like the narrative of my worst fear would have prevented me from ever making that choice. And yet there I was living out my worst fear of not having enough money to pay rent. I'm going to be homeless. None of that happened. I somehow made it always, but like the worst fear, I was there. I was like, I was literally at the bottom of the canyon. You know, like if you look over the cliff and you can't see the bottom, I was all the way down there, but yeah. I was still a person. I was still here. I was still living. I still had ideas of how I was going to get myself out of there. So I think like one thing is like, we have to check, we have to be observers of our fears and how we relate to them. We have to observe ourselves before buying into them, because they will, even though they come from a beautiful place of like trying to protect us, they will always, always limit us from what we're capable of. And we're capable of, like, I was just having this conversation with somebody, like, we're capable of a tremendous amount of pain, but we're not capable of a tremendous amount of anticipation of pain. Mm-hmm. Like the yep. anticipation just does us in yep. and it will stop us from doing the things that we're meant to do. Mm-hmm. The other thing is that emotional resonance is like a muscle. Like probably if you're just hearing of this for the first time, don't go quit your job, but maybe, maybe decide like, you know what? I usually eat a salad for dinner every night and I feel like having an ice cream, do the ice cream, you know, like tonight, make it a little, or today make it a little decision that is in alignment with you. Because the other thing is like, we have a core collective trauma of powerlessness in this country. We also have a core collective like wound around abandonment. And so every time that we make a decision for the status quo of our lives, whether it's what we're going to eat or what job we're going to have or breaking up or whatever, we abandon ourselves when we choose what is not resonant. And the more that we practice abandonment, the more that we bring in situations that mirror the abandonment and the powerlessness, because that is the law of attraction, mm-hmm. that we become a vibrational match yeah. to these things. Mm-hmm. So it's when we have the chances to make little decisions. Maybe today it's the ice cream. Maybe tomorrow it's, I'm going to take my full lunch instead of giving just a half hour lunch and then going to work early. Maybe after that, it's like, you know what? I'm going to tell my boyfriend that I don't like it when he says X, Y, or Z thing to me. And maybe mm-hmm. after that, I'm going to break up with my boyfriend because mm-hmm. actually he's abusive. So it's like we start small and we flex our muscles until we're strong enough to do the things that are the big sweeping choices. But I, from the, per the records, everyone who comes to Earth is generative and creative. Every human being is. Every human being is a problem solver. Every human being has like a center of creativity. And that tells me that we're all capable of creating our realities, but can we like get in the practice of it? Can we believe, can we have faith that that's even possible for us? And so the other thing the records say to us is compassion. Maybe not this lifetime, but you know what? You're eternal, so we'll see you next lifetime. Mm-hmm. Like, and that's okay too. We do the best that we can with the skills and the tools that we have. And there's only compassion for when we aren't doing what we thought would be better.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Leah, can you write a book? I'm serious. Oh. You could fucking write a book with this knowledge. It's just like, serious.
Yeah. Yeah, this is this all knowledge. Of us. Yeah.
I could listen to you talk forever. Literally, I'm just like sitting back, like absorbing all of it. I think it's so important. I think it's really important, actually. I think it's
Thank you. Yes. I don't know about writing a book. I had to write a fieldwork paper for school last year and I ended up taking an incomplete and I ended up turning it in 2 months late and like 20 pages over. Writing is maybe not this lifetime. Yeah. I don't know.
Well, you also have your Instagram post, which I love. Just like,
thank you.
What you write in your Instagram post is also really beautiful.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. We didn't even get to talk about crystals, which is just like such a little part of, not a little, but I mean, you do so many different things. And I thought for sure I was going to ask questions about that, but there was just other stuff.
Yeah. You know, I'm actually moving away from crystals a lot because they're so deeply entrenched with mm-hmm. the extraction economy of colonialism. And while I respect their consciousness and their agency, I am finding that the real work is not going to happen through crystals. It's happening like in and of ourselves. Mm. So I don't know if I have much to say about them anymore anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. Your own personal evolution.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Do you, I feel like I could be talking to you for 1,000 hours.
Yeah.
I also want to honor your time. I'm curious if you could connect a little bit this notion of, I just love what you said about we have to observe our fears before we buy into them and the way you were talking about that. But could you speak to the connection between fear and decoloniality?
In what way? What are you thinking?
I don't know that it's a fully formed question or thought.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm thinking of how like present our fear are, and how like one of like the ways I frame it often is that we have these moments in our life where we can choose to expand or we can choose to stay small. Mm-hmm. And when we're choosing to stay small, we're choosing our fears, and when we're choosing to expand, like, you know, that
we might have to push love,
comfort, but yeah. Yeah. And yeah. And I'm just curious to hear the way you would frame that within the lens of decoloniality.
Yeah. I want to tell you a story that I haven't really talked about publicly.
Ooh, yay.
Because I'm afraid. I have been afraid of this being a turnoff for people, but I opened the records. So a friend of mine has his own access point into the records. It's not Linda Howe's prayer. It's a different method. It's a different prayer. And I used his prayer to open the records because I wanted to see what's the difference, what happens here. And I opened the records and it was very different. It was very unwarm. Like the feeling I get when I open the records with Linda's prayer is like just a heart connection, just a warmth connection, just the feeling of love. And when I'm reading for someone else, I can feel this like just gooiness between me and the person I'm reading. And when I opened his method, it was like, I felt like I was in like the deep records of the library. Like just, there's just no people, there's no warmth here. There's no, and it turns out that I was like, where am I? And they were like, you're in the mind of the records. Like Linda Howe takes you to the heart of the records. This is the mind. Like, okay. I mean, not really, but that was the way they showed me.
So right. Right.
To understand why it felt so sterile. And I'm there and I'm not an auditory, I'm not clairaudient. So I don't hear the records. I'm claircognizant. I receive it through a sense of knowing. And I hear this clip-clop sound like a horse. And I hear this voice say, welcome to the Akashic Records. And this kind of like announcery game show voice. And this beast walks up and I can see him. And he looks like Baphomet, who is the archetype god of the Church of Satan. And which is an image that is meant to scare you. It's an image that is demonic or like, you know, the devil. And but this figure is so charming. And he's like, I'm at this counter and he like bends over and he like, you know, is talking to me in this very charming way. But I'm clearly aware that there's a divider between us. And I'm very suspicious because I have become empowered through the records. So I don't yield my power to many people ever, often. Mm-hmm. So I recognize that this being is showing me himself in this way for some point, but it's not working. And at one point he starts talking to me about justice, and because I'm like, who are you? And he shares his name with me, and I misinterpreted his name for a while. His name, he said, was Azrael. I later find out that his name is Azazel, who is a fallen angel. And you can Google him, you can Wikipedia him. He's right there in many different canonical texts. And he starts talking to me about what it is to be evil. And he says, I work for a higher justice outside of your system on Earth. And evil doesn't exist, only trauma. And that everyone in the universe will respond to how much trauma they've experienced. And he says, don't believe everything you read about me. Evil is a story of spin so that you will stay away from your own power, because I work and honor your power. And So I like, you know, oh, that's so weird. You know, like, what's happening? I'm talking to my friend. I'm like, this is so weird. Close the records. Like, and I'm somewhat like, did I just make that up? Is that real? And I observed it, though. I didn't like buy into it. I didn't dismiss it. I just observed it. And, but it scared me somewhat to like have this like Judeo-Christian understanding of what evil is, this image of a satanic figure, this, you know, like my whole life's knowledge. I've studied different canonical texts in like through school, like, you know, when I was in college, I studied the Old Testament or like the Tanakh, and I studied the New Testament. I studied the Quran. So I'm versed in like somewhat versed in like these stories of these beings and who we should stay away from and who, you know, how they're used in the exploration, how they're used in the church and different churches, whatever, which I'm also not in this moment judging that either, but the more, so I put it away. I did not revisit that being. I didn't want to. I was like, this is a weird thing that happened. Let's let it go. Mm-hmm. But the story of like evil being a story used to scare us into not exploring our own power really sat with me. And so I began to, I don't know, like it began to sit with me rather. Like it seeped in. And I couldn't let go of that. And I started to see it everywhere. And I started to see, like, if I'm eternal and nothing can kill me, then nothing is really scary. Because the worst thing that could happen is that I thought could happen is that I die. But I can't die. So if I can't die, then your ugliest, scariest, Baphomet devil-looking beast is just an appearance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I can see through it. And because I come from the records, from the heart of the records, because I understand the unconditional love and compassion, I can see straight through that facade to the trauma underneath, to the wounds. And when I can see that, I can have compassion even for Donald Trump, who is a person that is so unable to access love that he will enact violence on the entire planet. Like I can see, and I'm not saying that there aren't other issues of like white supremacy and money. Right. Right. There's other things too there. But like the scariest thing stops being scary. And then I'm able to take that lens and I'm able to look at all the other things that scare me, like maybe health, maybe this virus that is like unleashing hell on the entire planet. What are the fears that I'm coming up against in quarantine? Like, today, my boyfriend and I went to do laundry and I had to sit and think about it for a week. What day would I go? Where would we go? We don't have a washer and dryer in our apartment. Who are we going to have to see? What's going to happen? Are people going to respect our space? Are we going to contract this thing? Mm-hmm. I keep reading that like obesity is a pre-existing condition for this. And I'm like, okay, I don't agree with that. But like, what if it is, you know, like just all these things that start to make me afraid of the world and afraid of my own and make me forget my power and make me forget the presence of light that's in all of us. Forget mm-hmm. that we're, like you said, Kylie, that it's going to be okay. Like even in the midst of pain and chaos and terror, it's still going to be okay. Even in the presence of like a demonic, I hate the word demon now that I'm like, okay, but like even in the presence of this scariest figure, it's still going to be okay. In fact, that figure was trying to tell me that it actually is okay. But the story that we are fed through colonialism is to be afraid. And so you need us, you need the power structure to protect you from nature. And ultimately colonialism is founded on that, like the war that the Western man has created against nature. Mm. We don't need to be afraid of nature. Like when I was in the ocean at that moment, I literally could have drowned in the ocean and still the ocean was there to hold me. Like it's just like I don't know how to tell people to do this other than like, I don't know. And I wouldn't advise, I don't want to give advice, but like sitting with, maybe you're afraid of COVID-19, but what are you actually afraid of? Mm-hmm. Like, what does it represent?
Mm-hmm. What does it mean? Like, what does it mean to you? Yeah. Or what meaning do you ascribe to it?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then when you look at that, so like, I'm afraid of dying alone. I'm afraid of dying. I'm afraid of being a burden on others. I'm afraid that people won't be able to be near me if I get it. I'm afraid that my loved ones will leave me because they'll get it. Like, whatever those worst fears are, we can, I mean, if we really break it down, we will see that we are okay even in the midst of those things, and that we are, that we're going to survive them, that we're okay.
Yeah. That was like, okay, but that is actually, I think, isn't that, well, for me, I'll speak for myself, always the ultimate spiritual lesson, which is that, like, I hate to reduce it to something. I think you said something so simultaneously poetic and profound and all these things, but, and I feel like I'm reducing it down to something like having a mushroom experience, but when I do mushrooms or whatever, psychedelics, that is what the experience that I'm having. It's just a reminder that actually everything is actually all good. Like, we're just sitting in this world of love, and there's, and so I feel like I can say I can agree with that because I feel like I've experienced that.
Yeah.
It's hard for me to hold on to it. You know, I always want to hold on to it after like a trip or something, but you know, you just go back to whatever and that's fine too. But I think ultimately what I'm trying to say is I agree. I think what you're saying makes so much sense to me because I've had that experience.
But like, what if you haven't? Are you saying like, what if like for a person that's listening and hasn't?
No, I don't know if I really have a question, but I mean, that is an interesting point. I mean, I don't know.
Well, I think like the other missing part that I really like internalized is like just understanding that everything is sacred. So like, are you familiar with the Oracle of LA, Amanda Yates Garcia? She just wrote a book called Initiated. She's so cool. I went to go see her speak here when her book came out. And she basically, somebody asked something like, I forget what the question was, but she was like, everything is sacred. You don't need to go to a crystal shop to buy a magic crystal that's going to help you with whatever. Go outside and find a rock on the ground. Mm. That rock has known you your whole time that you've lived there. Like, that rock knows you better than any crystal could. Talk to that rock. That rock wants to work with you. Mm. The sacred is like, it's in everything. The consciousness of the, you know, the anima mundi, the soul of the world, it's imbued. It's in that vine that's like behind you in your window. It's like, it's in all the artifacts in your basement right now, like sitting with you. So like, we don't have to go far to like sit with, but we have to, if we can be the observer, then we can like kind of detach from like the judgment to dismiss things that are not physical and be like, okay, what if there is like an old artifact back here that's trying to talk to me? Let me just see if I can just like, let me just wonder if this could be true. So like, just the, I think like curiosity probably is like, wondering,
openness,
what's it trying to teach me? Openness
is
a really good way to move through fear.
I feel like I also am thinking about openness and curiosity, I think, are just like the best possible ways to meet fear. I love that so much. I don't want to skip over that. I think the other thing I'm thinking about, so I've had a bunch of basically, what I've realized is that since I'm in quarantine and I can't compulsively buy like lunch out, I'm just like investing in all the healers that I can find. It's the best thing ever. I highly recommend it if you are in a financial situation to do so. It's been really beautiful. So things are like really kind of snowballing in this really beautiful way the past few weeks. And one thing that has happened is I have had a lot of clarity around past life stuff, which is usually not my go-to, which is, I think, interesting because a lot of people, I think of the records about your past life, but I'm like, you know, of the, like, I'm really interested in the now. So I don't, it's not my go-to, but I'm beginning to see more of it. And I've got a lot around, that's come up for me around past life trauma of basically being a witch, although not in that term, right? But like that term being applied retroactively and being afraid of my own power. And in particular, the vision that I've had that's come up in multiple instances is like being basically a midwife and a baby dying and being blamed for it. And so being taken away from my own children. And at the time I was their only parent. So these children were abandoned. And so feeling like the thing that I'm working through in this moment from a past life perspective is that like to step into my power, to own my power and gifts is to directly jeopardize my family's safety. What's interesting is the story you just told lays on top of that perfectly, right? Because that is like, you know, my own inner knowing, my own wisdom in this past life, all being like vilified, right, as being like irresponsible. That's like kind of how I've interpreted it. Irresponsible, being evil, like your intuition and your own powers are not to be trusted. They're evil. What can be trusted is like capitalism and this externalized authority. And so, yeah, I guess I'm just affirming like that's, and also personally, that is just the message that's coming through for me so much so, like I felt uncomfortable sharing it at first because I, you know, as a white lady, I'm mindful of the ways in which certain spiritual messages I think can be really insensitive. And like, you know, like I can stand up here and say like, you know, the whole way in which manifestation has been weaponized against people, I find really uncomfortable, really shitty. And I don't want to participate in that. I don't want to participate in that from a place of ignorance. So the message I keep getting over and over again is like, this is a moment of transformation. And the opportunity for us is to step fully into our own power, to like let go of all the bullshit conditioning that tells us we are less than so absurdly powerful. And that if every single one of us, or even like 20% of us, could step into our own power, like
the shit
that we would build on the other side would be different. And that's actually the only way that the shit on the other side of this gets to be different.
Yeah. Yeah, and look at you now broadcasting your witchy ways on a podcast around the world.
Yes.
Despite, you know, it was funny too. My own process in the beginning was like, I'm recording. It's not out yet. And then I was like, we're recording, but like, I won't put my last name on it. And now I'm like, okay, so I channeled this thing called the Akashic Records and in my past life.
Let it out. It's liberating. It's like,
It feels so good.
Yeah. Okay. I want to share a quote though, because I think this quote came to mind for me, Leah, when you were talking. And I think, well, at least this is my interpretation. What I've got out of what you're saying. The quote is like, where there is suffering, there is falsehood. And I think that, I don't mean that as in to dismiss people's suffering, because I think the suffering is very real, but I do think that it means that it can point to something that we're believing or holding on to that is just not true. And I think so much of like the Buddhism really is also about getting back to the truth, like what is true. And when you get to what's true, usually you find that there's nothing scary or threatening about the truth. Truth is just is, and it's beautiful and it's synonymous with love. And that's kind of what I think is, that's what I think is really real. It's like extracting all the bullshit and then you get back down to what's left. What's left is beautiful.
Yes. I like that quote too, because it's like pain is a teacher to tell it, or it's like a compass telling us what way we're supposed to go. But suffering is like when you got stuck in like a dead end and you can't get back, you know, like, oh, the compass directed me down this dead end and now I'm just here spinning my wheels. And like, that is not ever, that is a massive falsehood that you're meant to just perpetuate in this like spinning wheel, like cycle.
Yeah.
Like, no, like not that you were supposed to never have pain. That's not going to happen. We're here. Like, we have pain receptors in our bodies so that we can know what it feels like. Mm-hmm. But like, it's supposed to be like, oh, that's painful. Let me go in that direction. Or that's painful. Let me figure out why.
Yeah.
Instead of like, oh, pain. I'm just meant to suffer this whole life. I'm just not going to do anything about it.
And I do believe
it. Or even, oh, sorry.
Oh, go ahead.
Even like, I've been thinking a lot about grief because I think collectively we're grieving. Yeah. And like, you have the moment of grief where it is like, if you're thinking about a loved one, where you sob, right? And it's a very painful experience. And like, you're like, you know, no one like is like psyched to sign up for that, but it's fucking real, right? Like in that moment, like you are connected to the love that you have for this person that you miss. Yeah. Like your grief is real and it's moving through you.
Yeah.
And then there's that like, numb shitty feeling that settles over you that is like, I think on some level our way of kind of avoiding the feeling. And to me that is the suffering. But the moment of like really actively grieving, there's something really sacred and beautiful about that I don't actually want to avoid, even if I would love to like not miss the people I'm grieving.
Right.
Yeah, totally.
I totally agree with that.
All right.
Okay.
Should we start winding it down?
So that we don't have a 24-hour podcast.
Yeah.
It happens.
All right, Leah. Well, we like to end the podcast with the same question, which is what's something that's bringing you joy right now?
TBH, quarantine is bringing me a lot of joy.
Yeah, I think it's good to just, yeah, that's good today.
Yeah, I couldn't even in my little decolonial imagination have envisioned a possible scenario where we could break free from so many systems that harm us and cloister in our homes and spend time, you know, so many of, I say this with full recognition that this is not the case for so many people, but for many, many of us, this time away from the reality that just wants to extract labor from us. And just, you know, at least for me, this has been, there have been so many moments of joy and like ideas and creativity that, and clarity that like wouldn't have come about if I was in the like doldrums of my routine. Not that my routine is doldrums, but like, just, I didn't have time. I didn't have the space. I didn't have the inability to not be constantly mirrored by the world before this. And so I've just, yeah, had, has been a really, in a lot of ways, a lot of joy has come from this.
Yeah. And I think it's wonderful that, I think that'll be really helpful for some people to hear, because people have such mixed emotions and some people are enjoying it and then feel guilt on top of enjoying, you know, it's like, so I think whatever your experience is totally.
Well, I think like joy really comes, I talk about this a lot with my friend Katie Robinson, but joy comes like adjacent to pain so often. Mm. We think that they're at different ends of the spectrum, but they're really like two sides of the same coin. And so, and that to me is like showing me like how resilient we are to be able to find joy in the midst of like the threat of death, really. That's like what we're all coming up against, is the threat of death. So finding joy there is like, it really is so empowering, because it's also like saying like, you can't scare me into like just worrying. I'm going to like find joy here too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, yeah. Yeah. I love that. Beautiful.
Yeah. Okay. All right, Eva, what is bringing you joy?
Oh, right. So, well, originally my answer was going to be Mrs. Doubtfire, because I was watching. I was comfort watching that, and it was like, but actually I wanted to add to this, because I think what really popped up for me as you were talking, Leah, was also like something that is very clear to me, is that simplicity is like something that I'm experiencing right now, which is really helpful for me, because I can be very indecisive, and I've always known that I wanted to live a more simple life, and now that I've been forced into it, I'm like, whoa, like, I don't want to live like this forever, but there's a lesson here about like all, like how much richer my life could be when I don't have all these choices that I need to make. And we live in the society where we want to have all of these options, but then it just gets like so overwhelming, and I'm cool with just like a couple of options, keeping it simple. Yeah. So that has been interesting for me. Yeah.
That's cool.
And you, Kylie, what's something that's bringing you joy?
That I am not wearing a bra anymore.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes, I know.
Like, I have always been the kind of person who's like, oh, like, I've been envious of the kind of people who could, there's lots of air quotes going on, could get away without wearing a bra, because, like, you know, that is not my body type. And I think I wore a bra once in the past 5 weeks. And instantly realized, and like, I'm just wearing shitty nursing bras. Like, it's basically a tank top anyway. And even then, I'm like, this is stupid.
Yeah.
And I feel so fucking liberated.
Yeah. I love it. Yeah.
That's so cool.
Yeah. All right, Leah. So where can people find you? I think you do so much. I already know, I'm already going to just throw a ringing endorsement for your Instagram, because I think it's, you just have like amazing content. So I know people can find you there. Yeah. Like, if you want to share all your handles and everything.
Yeah. You can find me at, what is my Instagram? Oh, Crystals of Altamira, Altamira. That's my Instagram. And then I also have a podcast with my friends, Jason Perez and Katie Robinson. And that's called We Are Power Crystals. And that's on like all the, it's on Instagram, but it's also like on, you know, Apple Podcasts and all Spotify and all that stuff. And then my website, crystalsofaltamira.com.
Awesome. Yeah. Awesome. And are you still doing groups? I noticed that you were doing some group meditation sessions. Or is that
I'm doing a theta meditation weekly. I'm trying to figure out when I'll do it this week. Tomorrow's my birthday. I'm like trying to.
Oh my gosh! Happy early birthday!
Thank you. Wait, thank you.
So Aries?
Yeah, yeah. I'm an Aries with double Taurus.
Okay.
Which I just learned because I'm not an astrologer, but I just learned that. But yeah, I had.
This, I'm like, a Taurus sun with an Aries moon, so we're like inverse of each other.
Yes.
Oh, I also don't know what that means, but
I don't really know.
Yeah.
Ah, okay, April 15th. Yeah. So I was like maybe gonna do a meditation tomorrow for like to have like a birthday gift to give everyone. But yeah, I've been doing that. I do remote client sessions if people want to book Akashic readings or healing sessions with me, and then I teach classes too.
Oh, awesome. Awesome.
Yeah, great. Awesome. Awesome.
All right.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, of what? Thank you. Yeah, seriously. It was our pleasure completely.
Thank you.
Kylie, do you want to share where people can find you?
Oh, yes. So join our Hello Universe Facebook group, Hello Universe Community. It's so much fun.
Yes.
I'm at Akashic Grace on Instagram. AkashicGrace.org is my website.
Oh, and me, Eva, you can find me on Instagram at badbitchliving, and my website is evaleah.com, and I'm also offering one-on-one sessions for meditation and mindset coaching. You can find all the deets there.